I'm Hannah Young, and you're listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick, sponsored by Philanthropic Impact.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you are in the world, welcome back to The Caring Economy with me, Toby Usnick. Today we have as our guest Martin Whitaker, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Just Capital. This is the leading nonprofit in the stakeholder capitalism arena, which we're going to talk about today. It is his job to run the ship. They also put out each year a fantastic survey or results of a survey that we call the Just 100. Martin, in addition to running Just Capital, is an advisor to Edelman, the world's largest privately held PR firm. He's co-founder and board member of the CREO or CREO Family Office Investment Syndicate. He's a board member of H2 Clipper, a member of the Forbes Finance Council and Forbes contributor, a member of Harvard Business School's Impact Weighted Accounts Initiative Advisory Council, and a commissioner to the World Business Council on Sustainable Development's Inequality Initiative. Martin, welcome to The Caring Economy.
Thank you, Toby. It's great to be here.
You must have had some mentors and some bumps along the way, and it's always fascinating for my audience to hear about how such a successful person got where he or she got.
I recall Steve Jobs' commencement comments at, I think it was Stanford, where he said, when you look back on your life, it looks like a completely logical series of moves that you've made. Yeah. When in actual fact, it's at the time, you know, kind of random, and you find a way to figure it out, no matter what your path is. And that's, I think, summarizes my journey. You know, I'm from the north of England, a place called Blackpool. I was lucky enough to go to university. Not many kids had the chance to do that back in the 1980s. And I went to St. Andrews. I met my now wife, Brenda, studied chemistry, and you know, I had a great time there, and my wife's Canadian. So after that, we moved to Canada. We had a couple of years at McGill, and I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to do. You know, I didn't know then really what path I wanted to be on. I had certain passions, but I wanted to make some kind of impact on the world. I always felt like I wanted what I do to have some kind of bigger meaning. Moved back to London. I got a job with an oil company, Elf Aquitaine, which is a French oil major, in the environmental group, because of my chemistry background. My boss there was somewhat of a visionary, and he really recognized that environment in an industrial company like that was ultimately a business issue and an economic issue, and that those are the most powerful levers of change. Just after I started there, I was offered a chance to do a PhD at Edinburgh University in Scotland in environmental science. And you know, I always remember in the first week of starting my PhD, my supervisor, a guy called Simon Pollard, takes me for coffee and said, "Look, I got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is I'm quitting. The good news is I'm joining industry, and I'm going to stay on as your PhD supervisor, and the head of the whole department will be your sort of overall supervisor internally. But what we're going to do is make sure that your PhD is totally relevant to, you know, to business and industry." So it was great. I had really very little supervision. I could take courses in everything. And I was so hungry back then to learn. And I was doing courses in sustainable agriculture. I loved what the idea of the environment and environmental issues being financial and business issues. This is around the time where the first United Nations conferences were starting on sustainability. It was really the UN Environment Program had a series of finance and insurance initiatives after the Rio Earth Summit to really bring in finance to solving big problems. And that just really appealed to me. My PhD was in sort of environmental risk assessment. I just wanted to go into the private sector. I felt like I could have the most impact there. And that sort of set me on this path that I'm on. I had a couple of years at a consulting firm, and then I joined a startup, which was the first ESG rating company, a company called Innovest. I was in on the ground floor, and we were working with big pension funds and big asset managers. you know, I had to do an MBA because I didn't really speak the language of finance or business. So I picked up those skills, and I felt like something was happening here, and that kind of set me on the path that I'm on. And it's always been around, how do you get capital and business and money to try and be a force for greater good, you know, mm-hmm. to be a leverage, point of yeah. leverage. And that took me into Swiss Re, to Mission Point, and then ultimately to what I'm doing now at Just Capital.
It's interesting, since you were doing your PhD studies, how we've gotten more sophisticated, more capable, more consistent in measurement, because if you can't measure and monitor these things, you can't really move the meter on it. It does seem like you're at the right place in the right time, but now you're also helping to shape the future in a way that's really quite inspiring and inclusive. And that, to me, is most comes to the fore with the rankings. Every year, Just Capital does their this year it's the 2023 ranking of America's most just companies. You just came out with this year's rankings on January 10th, I believe. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the ranking, and then we'll talk about some of the results for this year?
Just Capital is almost 10 years old. We were founded by Paul Tudor Jones, Ronaldo Brutico, Deepak Chopra, Arianna Huffington, Ray Chambers, a few people who felt very passionately that business needed to be a force for good in the world, and the private sector, and especially major corporations, needed to do more heavy lifting. Paul Jones, who's our chair now, is a major philanthropist. And, you know, he could see, obviously his day job was running Tudor Investment Corp. He could see that unless and until you got the private sector to do more, philanthropy and government were just fighting an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. So the question really was, how do you do that? How do you create a race to the top? How do you incentivize big companies to, in our parlance, be more just? And we felt like if we could do that, then there'd be a massive sort of multiplier effect, that good things would happen. So the rankings is one of the things that we do to create the incentives for companies to be more just. It all starts with the voice of the public. We did not want the definition of a just company, or the issues essentially that we track companies on, to be about things that we decided mattered. Mm-hmm. We felt it was important. If you're going to start any movement, it doesn't start from the top. It starts from the grassroots, right? From the bottom. Absolutely. So we went to Main Street America, tens of thousands, now hundreds of thousands of people, on a fully representative basis. What issues do you care about? What matters to you? And when you do that, it's really interesting what happens. I remember when we started, you know, a lot of people in my world would say, well, why would you ask the public? Because, you know, they don't know anything, and they can't agree on anything. Right. And actually, that's turned out not to be the case. What you get is a very common sense kitchen table set of priorities, which most people are united around, and most people can see really where companies could be doing a better job. And it relates to how they treat their workforce, how they support the communities where they operate, how they look after their customers, how do they protect the planet, and of course, how do they make money and generate a return for shareholders. Mm-hmm. And so that's the basis on which we rank companies. We are our team. We're 50 odd people now in New York City. We then do the tough work of gathering data to track, measure, and objectively rank the 1,000 largest publicly traded companies in America, mm-hmm. on all the highest priority issues that matter to the public. Mm-hmm. And then from that, we produce rankings. You can go on our website, justcapital.com, and see pretty much how any company does on any issue that you care about. The whole point is here is that people will care about different things. And so you can go on and customize how you use the site, you know, what data you gather and what companies you look at. But when you aggregate everything, when you look across all the weights of all the issues that I've alluded to, the weights, by the way, are also defined by the public, mm-hmm. on a sort of a choice methodology. And so we think these companies are doing the best job at doing right by, you know, ordinary folk around the country. And then we lift up leadership. That's the other key part of our strategy, Toby, is we're not about naming and shaming. We think that the better long-term incentive is to really showcase leadership, highlight which company's doing the best job. We have a seal, like the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. We have our Just Seal of America's Most Just Companies. And then we engage very heavily with those companies to help them on their journey. And that whole set of things is sort of wrapped around a very public brand and a very public-facing narrative around the role of business in society today.
It's U.S.-centric in the sense that they can be multinationals, but they are...
They're U.S., exactly. They're the biggest U.S. publicly traded corporations. Now, obviously, we want to expand, so hopefully one day we'll be tracking global companies, we'll be polling in different countries, and perhaps even helping private companies track and rank themselves.
Mm-hmm. So this year, the number one on the list was Bank of America, and you also had in the top 10 NVIDIA, Microsoft, Accenture, Truist Financial, Verizon, Hewlett-Packard Enterprises, Apple, Intel, JP Morgan Chase. I'm not surprised by most of those actually that I'm familiar with, but can you tell us about maybe who rose up this year and who went off and perhaps why?
Well, Bank of America is the first time we've had a, let's say, a non-semiconductor software technology company as number one. That's mm-hmm. kind of interesting. The banks did a lot better this year overall. They created more jobs, which is the second most important issue in the methodology. They've done an enormous amount to lift wages and invest in their frontline workforce. Mm-hmm. Bank of America has committed to $22 to $25 over a period of time, lowest wage. And so what you tend to get is all the worker-related issues most heavily weighted. So mm-hmm. if companies do well in investing in human capital, they tend to do well in our rankings, and the banks have done the best job of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also interesting to see how the issues themselves, you know, kind of vary. The number one issue by far is pays a fair and living wage. Mm-hmm. So that's a big factor. You know, we've seen companies lift wages. We saw Walmart, which is a Just 100 company, announce wage increases only yesterday to a $15 minimum wage. So we're starting to see major changes. I think the rankings, the other thing I would note about the rankings is it's obviously very disclosure based. You know, our analyst team gathers data from multiple sources, and we then show everything to the companies on a fully transparent basis so they can see everything. Those companies that disclose, you know, have they done a pay equity analysis to make sure they're paying people fairly for the same job? What are they doing on things like paid family leave or other mm-hmm. benefits? If it's in the public domain, we use it. So we've seen a lot of increase in disclosure, and the companies you mentioned do a phenomenal job of disclosing what they're doing to invest, mm-hmm. you know, across their workforce. Intel is probably, you know, I always call them out because they do one of the best jobs I've seen, and on sort of pay disclosure, it's really, you know, phenomenal. So it varies across the board what companies are good at, but mostly the top 10 names are pretty good at everything.
So in addition to things like paying a living wage and job creation, what are some of the other methodology topics that are really prominent this year? Is it climate or environment? Is it social justice? Or how do those issues get factored in?
The methodology worked is we identify the top 20 issues overall. And so, you know, what you tend to get there is, I mentioned, you know, fair and living wage. The number two issue is creates jobs in the US. Mm-hmm. We see acting ethically as a very important issue. People expect companies to lead with integrity. Mm-hmm. And so we try to measure controversies around leadership, management, fines, and other areas where it's you know, that's sort of called into question. We see, obviously, post-COVID, investing in worker benefits, health and safety, very, very important. Climate is there, so that's a little lower down. We tend to see environmental issues a little lower down. It's not to say they're not important, just that for most people, you know, especially, you know, in a higher cost of living environment, people worried about the economy, people prioritize putting food on the table and being able to, you know, have a stable job. So it's really an interesting reflection, I think, of how people are really feeling about themselves, about the economy, and really what they think companies should be doing. We also poll, I should say, on attitudes to business overall. You know, should they be speaking up on issues of social relevance? You know, how should they be acting or you know, showing up on political issues? This whole ESG pushback has sort of created a whole new line of questioning. You know, do you really think that it's companies' jobs to do that? Like, what do you think about all that? So we have a lot of public opinion research that helps guide businesses, you know, in this moment as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, again today on The Caring Economy, we have Martin Whitaker. He's the CEO of Just Capital, and we're discussing their 2023 Just Capital rankings. Sticking with that sort of what some say is wokeness, some call, you know, activism. What about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion? How does that get measured, or how high up is it important in importance to your those you're surveying?
It's certainly up there in, you know, in the top 20 issues. It tends to be sort of, you know, mid-range as an issue, but it's an interesting thing to break down because, for example, when you poll Black Americans on what are the things companies can do to promote and advance racial equity in the workplace, guess what? Pays a fair living wage is at the top of the list. Sure. So DEI is not meant to capture every possible facet that a company of a company's performance related to, you know, issues that are captured. That what it tends to capture is, are companies walking the talk on the commitments that they've made? We saw a lot of companies post George Floyd's murder make pledges, make commitments to become more diverse. We've been tracking that actually on our website, one of the few organizations to really track what large companies are doing, you know, to follow through on those commitments. And so it's a very important part of our work. Listening to one of our first focus groups last night, and again, it comes up. It's not always couched in the same kind of language. You know, DEI, again, is something that we use for convenience sake to try and capture things and measure things like board diversity and so on. But when you really think about employee engagement, how to treat employees with dignity and respect, that can show up in lots of different ways. And so we tend to look holistically across a number of different worker-related issues, but we do measure whether companies have done, for example, whether they've disclosed on their EEO-1 data, their Equal Employment Opportunities data, or have they done a pay equity analysis to make sure that people, regardless of gender or race or, you know, other, you know, identifiers, are they paid the same for doing the same job, or is there some sort of bias in there? So, you know, most people, when you talk to them, tend to see that as being an essential element of a just company. And so it makes sense to me. And, you know, so it's captured throughout, you know, a lot of the worker related criteria.
So Martin, our audience is made up of certainly C-suite executives, leading brands. We also have younger career starting students who are trying to figure out where they want to spend their purpose-driven career. For the C-suite executives who may not know of Just Capital until today, do you offer consulting services as well, or is it just you do the monitoring and the rankings?
So we do engage with companies, and I would encourage any board member of any company, regardless of size, but especially if you're in the C-suite of a large company, to reach out. You know, what we want to do is work with companies, regardless of where they are in their journey, to help them understand what does best practice look like, to benchmark themselves. There's multiple ways to engage with our team. obviously we're a nonprofit, so we do look for financial support, but you know, we've really over the last couple of years begin to lean into our corporate engagement. I would say to you, Toby, that our corporate engagement numbers are through the roof. When we started out, we had initially of the Russell 1000 universe, maybe 20 or 30 companies interested in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Now we have, I think this year, our corporate engagement numbers set new highs. We have over 550 plus companies in some form of direct engagement with us. We had well over 300 companies in our corporate portal, which is where companies go in to look at the data and dig around to see how we're measuring performance. They speak to our analyst team. We run a whole series of events and activities. Over the last couple of years, we've stood up some programs, and the programs are really a sort of a where we work directly with companies on key high priority issues, and they tend to be under the worker umbrella, this sort of just job umbrella. And so that's worker financial health. It's also to do with racial equity. It's to do with benefits and paid family leave. So it's really a how-to. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in the C-suite, you want to try and figure out how can we be better on this. Mm-hmm. That's what those programs are for. And we would invite any company to participate in that. The other sort of pillar of our platform is working with investors. So if you want to try and understand the business case and the investment case for stakeholder leadership, mm-hmm. Value creation for your different stakeholders, we've done a lot of work in that area. We have indices, we have a just ETF with Goldman Sachs. We have other investment research that connects leadership with return on equity. We see a lot of analysis around sort of fundamental business and accounting financial metrics. So that's another area where I think we've done some really interesting work, which always helps, because no matter what you do, you have to make the business case for it at Absolutely. The end of the day. And if you're publicly traded, of course, you know, you want to, shareholders are a very important stakeholder, and you want to communicate why you're investing in these areas.
Yeah, and there's no need to go it alone, right? There's all this data and case history. And now at the other end of the career spectrum, I'm going to make a plug for you and for the Just Capital Ranking. This is a place for young kids, students in college and a little bit out of there to look and see where are the brands that really resonate, that have the kind of leadership they might want to work with. Are there other tricks of the trade, so to speak, you might recommend to young college students in how to tap into the knowledge and the insight that comes from the ranking or from Just Capital?
Yeah, I think our vision was always that, you know, if you wanted information on what companies were doing on an issue that mattered to you, whether it's to affect the way, you know, you shop, your consumer habits, maybe you're an early investor interested in the stock market, maybe you're looking for a job and you want to know, okay, well, what are the top companies doing on work-life balance or, I don't know, protecting customer privacy? So we want you to come to Just Capital for that information. So there's empowerment through information. There's mm-hmm. also engagement. We actually have a Just Gen program, which is for early career individuals who mm-hmm. want to join our network, are looking to plug in. We do events. We do Just Gen sort of meetings, and we're very happy to connect people into that, really growing quickly. And, you know, I think we're always interested in ideas. We're a nonprofit. We're out there in the public domain. If people have ideas on how to get our data out there, how to start movements, you know, how can we be more effective in tapping what we think is out there, which is a desire, you know, I would say across the board, but maybe especially in, you know, younger people.
Agreed.
To align how they shop, how they work with their values. And, you know, to do that, you need good data. And so we'd love your ideas on how we can get data out there more effectively to that group.
Martin, just for, I want to let you have the last word, pearls of wisdom, career-wise, or in pursuing such a meaningful life. Any advice you give to your younger self, or to, it could be young students, but it could also be people who might be disrupted mid-career by COVID or what have you. So any pearls of wisdom you've gleaned through the years?
Yeah. I think don't be afraid to go off the beaten path. You know, one of the things that I think looking back that I sort of managed to cobble together was a sort of an interesting set of skills at the intersection of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was more by luck than judgment, but sort of instinctive. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the way, you know, the advice I give to my kids. I have four kids. I have two artists. I have one who's going into business and one who's very interested in sort of a career in international relations. You know, looking off the beaten path, trying to connect dots together that you see out in the world that you think are just really interesting. Mm-hmm. And because I think that that's how you solve real problems. You know, I look at all the major challenges the world faces, some of the root causes of some of the biggest challenges that we have. You know, they're only going to get addressed if we bring people of disparate backgrounds together, if you yourself in your career can put together skill sets that don't often come together. You know, that's sort of how you stand out. And I think that is going to be much more in demand in the future.
Hear, hear. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Martin Whitaker for being our guest today. He's the CEO of Just Capital, and I encourage you to see their latest rankings for 2023 that just came out in January. Martin, thank you so much and wishing you a really great new year.
My pleasure, Toby. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick. Please share your comments and questions with Toby via Twitter at @TUsnick or LinkedIn at Toby Usnick. And thank you for sharing The Caring Economy with your friends and colleagues.